Hey, everybody. It's the Charlie Kirk Show. James Lindsay and Darren Beatty. We talk about the Gnosis, the One Mind, Hermeticism, and also some breaking January 6th news. Email me your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the Loan Experts I Trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com. Welcome, everybody. Email us freedom@charliekirk.com and subscribe to the Charlie Kirk Show podcast. Joining us now is Darren Beatty, who just dropped a wild story about a January 6th whistleblower. Darren, welcome back to the program. Tell us about the story.
So great to be back here, especially to talk about this breaking story. We just published it a few seconds ago. So it's white hot and brand new and deeply, deeply important. So the summary of it is this. Basically, the Biden regime, I mean, the title speaks for itself, Biden regime's seven-year prison sentence for Green Beret January 6th whistleblower reopens festering wounds of Fed's erection line. Jeremy Brown is a Green Beret, a hero who served his country admirably in many contexts, but not just a military context. In early January, Joint Terrorism Task Force agents approached him, trying to recruit him as an informant for something big that was going down in January. Now, how these agents were aware of something big going down in January in early December is another fascinating question. But we'll set that aside for now.
The timing's really important, but please keep going. Yeah.
Yep. They try to recruit him as an informant. He says no. He recorded the exchange and he published it as a whistleblower saying, look, they were recruiting. There were agents in there. January 6th is a lie. And after he did that, the feds retaliated against him, turning a misdemeanor charge that they weren't even going to charge him into felony charges that they ultimately sentenced him for 7 years in prison for. The details of this are so scandalous, such an egregious case of, forget about prosecutorial discretion, this is prosecutorial gymnastics. The same kinds of implausible contortions that the prosecutors use to go after Trump, to go after the meme maker Doug Mackey, we're seeing the same malicious innovations employed here in a clear case of retaliation against probably the number one January 6th whistleblower.
So the story is at the front page of Revolver.News right here. So he was a whistleblower to whom and to when? So walk us through that.
Right. So as I mentioned, he was approached in early December. They were trying to recruit him as an informant for January 6th. He told them he was going to record the exchange. He did record it. And then in March, so after January 6th in March, he said, look, things are starting to look really fishy, this whole January 6th thing, the way it went down. And keep in mind, March was before Revolver News's classic piece is opening up the Fed's erection story. And in March, this Green Beret decided to come forward and say, look, this doesn't look good. It looks fishy. I owe it to the public to expose their recruitment efforts on me. And in the course of that exchange, they said he's just one of many people that they were going after trying to recruit. And so he made this public and he offered his opinion that, yes, there were many federal agents and informants involved in January 6th. This was in March. And then all of a sudden, the government decides, okay, we're going to make this guy's life hell for a misdemeanor trespassing charge, a charge that, by the way, was freely available to them to go after Ray Epps and others, which raises the question, why didn't they? You know, people say Epps didn't go into the Capitol. Well, neither did Jeremy Brown, and they made his life hell over a misdemeanor charge. But the thing is they added a domestic terrorism investigation, which allowed them to search his house. They found a grenade, and on the basis of that grenade, they put felony charges. Brown maintains that the grenade was planted. He maintains that the motivation for planting the grenade is to retaliate against him for whistleblowing. In the course of his trial, the judge refused to even allow him to talk about this recording and whistleblowing, saying it was totally irrelevant to Jeremy Brown's stated motive for the government retaliating, which I think is pretty shocking.
So in December of 2020, he was approached and basically said, hey, something big is happening.
Something big is happening and we want you to work for us.
Yeah, and so this is important. So this ties in with the Fox News settlement with Dominion in an unrelated way. Is it possible, Darren, that some of the narratives that were dominating the news cycle, without getting any specifics, in 2020 December, were actually PSYOP campaigns by the government to increase the temperature and increase the outrage? Is that possible? Because if they knew in December of 2020 that January 6th was going to be kind of this crescendo mark, were they the ones introducing this? I mean, have we even begun to reveal if they had any federal agents in the media? Conservative media, I mean.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised at all. And there are so many secondary, you know, questions here. There's the question here of Brown. The case of the persecution and prosecution of Brown illustrates they could have easily charged Ray Epps with multiple things, which they didn't. They underwent the same gymnastics not to prosecute Epps as they did to prosecute and ultimately sentence Brown to 7 years. So there's that. There's the scandalous details of prosecutorial misconduct and contortion. And of course, there's the question that you bring up, which is that if they had all of these agents, and this was just coming out of Tampa, this was just in Florida alone, they were approaching tons of people. Probably not everybody denied them in the way that Brown did. Probably several people said yes, but it shows that Florida and militia groups were on the government's radar as early as early December. They were trying to recruit. And so, you know, all these cases of Florida, the J6 cases for seditious conspiracy, if there was any conspiracy there, the government was already on it. They were already tracking it. They already admitted to Brown in this recording, which is available on the Revolver story. We published the recording of the recruitment attempt as well. They say something big is going down and they're approaching a bunch of people. So if they were giving that level of scrutiny to Florida alone, how do you explain that these Florida people they were looking at ended up pulling off some kind of conspiracy? It raises so many dark and disturbing questions. How they treated this whistleblower.
We are seeing more and more evidence that people within our intelligence community saw what happened in the 2020 election. They saw the energy, and they saw an opportunity to try to create a moment where they could have their agents, their instigators, to be able to get people to act uncharacteristically, like a color revolution, to be able then justify a Patriot Act 2.0, and then be able to spread some of these messages in Operation Mockingbird to try to give the incoming regime momentum. They're semi-fascists. They are all these different things. And so Darren, we may never actually know, but we'll be able to get bits and pieces and hopefully be able to put the puzzle together. You know, who was calling the shots here, right? Because is it then basically what we are coming to believe? That this was Donald Trump's own government that was actively working against him again, 1 minute remaining.
Yes. I mean, it's only in the most strict legal sense that you could call it Donald Trump's government, in the sense that
he was
the head of the executive branch. In practice, in any meaningful way, it wasn't his government. And that's what we learn over and over of all these bureaucracies doing everything they could to sabotage him and to utterly destroy the energies associated with his victory in 2016. And they've done a pretty good job of making it impossible to even talk about 2020 anymore. Now, in some cases, you go to jail. In some cases, you just, you know, financially destroyed.
Look, are you concerned about the American K through 12 education system? Are you worried about what your children and your grandchildren are learning or honestly not learning in school? If you answer yes, my friends at Hillsdale College have a free resource for you. Hillsdale College understands the importance of education to the future of our country. They're now offering 10 free print copies of their recent issue of Imprimis. It's titled Education as a Battleground, written by Hillsdale College President Larry P. Arn. The special issue provides a factual account of the issues in the ongoing battle over education, explaining why parents and teachers, not unelected bureaucrats or activists, should guide what our children are learning. With Hillsdale College, you can make a difference in your community by distributing these copies of Imprimis at your church, local business, or even in your doctor's office. Do not miss this opportunity to arm yourself with the facts. Claim your 10 free copies of Education as a Battleground by visiting charlie4hillsdale.com. That's charlie4hillsdale.com. I love Hillsdale College. I'm an enthusiastic promoter of them. So check it out right now at charlie4hillsdale.com. All right, Darren. So this Green Beret says the feds approached him in early December ahead of something big, which was January 6th. Are there examples of people on the right, of other folks, getting approached by feds to recruit them before January 6th? Let's connect the dots.
Yes, there are several examples. One example is from the kind of famous provocateur commentator Milo Yiannopoulos, who sent out a message over Parler. I'm not sure what the verb is. He parlayed, saying, and this was really close to January 6th. I think it was on the 5th, maybe the 4th, saying whatever, I'm paraphrasing, whatever they've got planned on the 6th, it's big, you know, stay the hell away, basically. Mm-hmm. So he knew something was up. And, you know, there have been general reports out basically confirming that the feds had contacted a lot of people.
No, he said he was approached. Remember, if we could find the post, Milo had a picture of an FBI badge or a document, right? It was like very, I don't know if you remember this or not, Darren. It might still be on his Telegram, but he was approached by agents.
Yes, and that's my understanding, and that's certainly a reasonable inference from the Parler message.
Yep.
That he sent out. So, I mean, I think the important thing to understand is this was the infiltration operation was extensive. And as we learned from Brown, which is, you know, Milo's case was right before January 6th, and Brown, this was early December. You know, in early December, it's quite something that they already knew that something big was going down in January. You know, that wasn't common knowledge. That was before, you know, Trump was even tweeting about anything at the Capitol, before there was a rally there that was publicly established, anything. So it's extremely bizarre, especially when you compound it with the fact that the sort of Florida Oath Keeper groups were some of the most heavily prosecuted in the seditious conspiracy cases. But we have confirmation here that agents were tracking everything going down in Florida, including the militia groups, as early as early mm-hmm. December. Mm-hmm. So how did they have this conspiracy like slip out of their fingers? It raises so many bizarre questions. And obviously, to me, since I've reported so much on Epps, it totally destroys any kind of position that, oh, the government didn't prosecute Epps because he didn't go into the Capitol. Because in the case of Brown, in the case of some others like Mark Ibrahim, they have been charged with trespassing. But the government only charges people with trespassing if they're kind of pissed off at them for some other reason. But in the case of Epps, he was a very egregious person who was kind of on paper exactly the kind of person that they would want to make an example of. He was a guy in a Trump hat, in a camo outfit, urging people to go into the Capitol, directing people to the Capitol. He was the former head of the Arizona chapter of yep. the heavily prosecuted Oath Keepers. So it really intensifies so many pre-existing questions, open wounds of the Fed's insurrection lie, in addition to showing in great and personal detail exactly the lengths that the Feds are willing to go to shut up and to shut down one of the handful of people brave enough to be a whistleblower. And I think it kind of answers the question as to why more people don't come out. If you come out, you know, you're not going to have a very easy life.
So then what are the marching orders for this Republican Congress? 1 minute remaining, Darren, to get these answers. Because I feel as if, you know, we keep on pushing forward, but we haven't had serious people be held accountable yet.
No, there's no accountability. It's difficult to do that. I think that in light of recent prosecutions, we need to make political weaponization of the DOJ, prosecutorial misconduct, that needs to be front and center of any GOP agenda. Because as I've said before, they've moved from shutting you up and shutting you down off of social media to prosecuting you and putting you in jail. And that is a very dark and dangerous escalation in our march to tyranny.
Finally, tell us how things are going at Revolver.News. Seems like you guys just keep breaking stories. Tell us more.
Things are white hot. I encourage everyone go to Revolver.News for this bombshell January 6th piece. We have another piece in the works that exposes an interesting and very disturbing historical link between the trans phenomenon today and a disturbing practice in the Ottoman Empire. So stay tuned for that. That's coming out soon, probably this evening.
Very good. Darren, thank you so much. Great work as always. We're behind you 100%.
Thank you, Charlie.
Hey, everybody. Charlie Kirk here. Just when you thought it couldn't get any better, Mike Lindell with MyPillow is launching the MyPillow 2.0. That's right. You heard me. MyPillow 2.0. When Mike Lindell, great American patriot, invented MyPillow, it had everything you could ever want in a pillow. But now 20 years later, he discovered a new technology that makes it even better. The MyPillow 2.0 has a patented adjustable fill on the original MyPillow. And now with a brand new fabric that is made with a temperature regulating thread. For exclusive listeners, the MyPillow 2.0 is buy one, get one free offer with promo code Kirk and get your best sleep ever. MyPillow 2.0 temperature regulating technology is 100% made in America and comes with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Go to MyPillow.com and click on the radio listener square to buy one and get one free offer. Enter promo code Kirk or call 800-875-0425 to get your MyPillow 2.0 now. That is MyPillow.com, promo code Kirk. Check it out. Joining us now is one of my favorite people on earth, James Lindsay. He's super smart and he's tough and he works his tail off. The book is Marxification of Education. You guys got to check it out. The Marxification of Education. James, I want to talk to you about that book, but more urgently, I want you to connect the dots because I did this sloppily yesterday. I did my best to try to talk about how the elites, they want artificial intelligence to try to achieve the gnosis, the oneness of mind. Can you build that out? You're the first one to ever say that. It makes perfect sense to me, but make it make sense to our audience.
Yeah, let's see what I can do. It's good to see you. The elites are trying to build, let's just cut all the BS. The elites are trying to build God, and they're trying to build God in the computer. And so the idea is actually that what they want to do is they want to use AI. We all know about the ChatGPT or GPT, whatever the letters are. We all know about this. We know that it's woke. We know that they're trying to install their values into it. For example, somebody just sent me an example today that's, can you make a joke about women? And it's like, oh, as an AI, I can't possibly, language model, I can't possibly, you know, make a joke about women. That would be inappropriate. We should be inclusive to women. Can you make a joke about men? And it was like, yeah, a man goes to the bar and blah, 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 blah. It immediately makes fun of men, doesn't make fun of women. And there are a million examples.
But can it tell you what a woman is? That's the other question.
Well, you know, it depends on if you tell it that it has to.
No,
it's true, though. It gives you the whole social constructivist lie that we have to consider gender roles and blah, blah, blah. And so what they're trying to do is build out these values in the AI, which is going to, it's not just about chat, you know, programs that are going to kind of replace Wikipedia to answer questions for people to understand the world around them, which will give them misleading answers because it's woke, mm-hmm. thus conditioning their minds to think in particular ways. It will also be the way that your algorithm is tailored. So the idea in the long run is that AI is going to become smart enough to where it knows you better than you. That's the most important idea. And it knows the correct values that you're supposed to have. And it knows your psychological profile. It knows what gets you upset. It knows what makes you happy. It knows what makes you want to go on a spending spree at Amazon. It knows what kind of products you're going to want to buy. Not yet, but it's getting there. And the idea is that the algorithm will feed you very selectively. It'll be constantly reading your behavior, determining where you're at in your day and in your life. And then it's going to come back and feed you the prompts that are going to get you to engage in the desired behavior or the desired thoughts, so that everybody's going to adopt a new sustainable mindset, the new inclusive mindset. And if it works the way that they think it's going to work, it'll be able to get into everybody's head better than any, you know, FBI propagandist or whatever else. That's the way that they think they're going to, that they're going to control the population going forward in, you know, the next 10 to 20 years.
But then what, but they want to try to create a collective gnosis. What does that word mean, and where does it come from?
So, you know, gnosis is a word that it comes from the Greek. The word gnosis is a old Greek word. It actually means knowledge. And it's supposed to, in the ancient Greek, it actually just kind of means generic knowledge. But that's not the way that it got used. There are these religious cults that were prominent before Christ, and the most famous ones were in the first and second century after Christ. There were Christian Gnostic cults like the Valentinian cult, the Zethian cult, the Manichaean cult, which was dabbled in all this kind of esoteric kind of mysticism. And what gnosis is in those cult religions is it's saving knowledge. It's secret knowledge, mostly about who you actually are, that allows you to escape the prison of reality and to merge back with God. And so it's, rather than that you, in the Christian religion, would take Jesus as the way, the truth, and the life, and the one way back to the kingdom, it's now that you yourself, you get to know yourself on a deeper level. You get to have enlightenment about the true nature of being and the true nature of yourself. And when you have that, then you become not just the savior of yourself, but the savior of everybody else. Kind of it's a model of that would be like the Buddhist idea of the so-called bodhisattva, which is this enlightened character. He's realized the secret truth of the world. He's enlightened, but he comes back, he reincarnates into the world to help other people get enlightened too. In other words, he's a guru. And that's the idea of gnosis, is secret saving knowledge. So trans people have gnosis, that they were meant to be born in a different body, and that the social construction should affirm and celebrate their ideas. Feminists have gnosis, that they were meant to have a particular life, but they unfortunately have a fertile uterus that ends up sometimes getting them pregnant. And so they have to be radically religiously against abortion because it takes away the vision for their own life. And the critical race theorists have gnosis, that the world was actually constructed around white supremacy in order to uphold certain people and oppress people of color. And this is the way that the world is organized for this kind of religion. Karl Marx is really responsible for dragging it into the modern era. And this is going to be relevant to the sustainability thing, because he said that the true gnosis, the true secret knowledge of humanity, is that humans are actually socialist creatures. We're species beings. We work for our species, or as Mao put it, your job is to serve the people. And so we're not actually individuals. We're not actually people who can have private property and individual thoughts. We all actually are meant to serve society as socialists.
Yes, and that's why AI plugs this in.
That's right. That's exactly right. So your goal, whether it's Marxism, whether it's queer theory, whether it's, you know, Paulo Freire with the Marxification of education, he says it explicitly, is to die and be reborn into the correct value system.
Yes.
And that correct value system is salvific. No, it's going to save humanity.
Are they that explicit to take Christian theology and just repurpose it? I mean, is it by mistake is there an intention behind that?
I mean, Marx certainly was rejecting and rebelling against Christianity. But if we look at from the World Economic Forum much more recently, if we look at Yuval Noah Harari, who is their historian that's pretending to be their big scientific futurist, he said that their goal with all of this is to build the new Noah's Ark, where the people who are elect and enlightened are going to get to go in the kind of computer.
Well,
upload
that implies
your consciousness
that there's a flood coming.
That's right. Well, it's going to be the climate change flood is, I think, the one he's referring to. But there's going to be a massive destruction of everybody who's not elect, and everybody who has the secret salvific knowledge is going to get to go off. And he says it's a digital Noah's Ark. We're going to upload consciousness and so on. But when you ask, are they so brazen as to repurpose Christian theology? He called it a Noah's Ark. Yes, I mean very explicitly. They know what they're doing.
I mean, he's a Jew, but yeah, no, that's right. That's central Jewish theology is
correct.
Yeah,
and so their idea is though. I mean, in these Gnostic religions, the goal is actually that humans are the third person of the Godhead, not the Holy Spirit, and the mind of God is the second person, not Christ. And the God himself, the undifferentiated all, is the first person of the Godhead, very much actually like Christianity. And so you've got these two other ideas. So the goal is that first you must realize that you as a human being are the third person of the Godhead. Mm-hmm. You are inseparable from God. That's what enlightenment in Buddhism would be about, is that you are the same as the divine. That's what the namaste in yoga or in Hindu thought is. The divine in me recognizes the divine in you is a translation of that. The idea is that you recognize that you, in fact, are continuous with the divine. You are a fragment of the mm-hmm. divine that only thinks you're separate, that only believes through the falseness of the distinctions of the world that you're separate. And so what you're supposed to do is then raise your consciousness to the level of a Christ consciousness. You are to merge back with the mind of God. That's the gnosis. And then you self-beget, and you see this very explicitly with trans. They are literally self-begetting. They're making themselves into the vehicle that they think they were meant to be born into that they weren't. And then when you achieve that, then you're in the position in the Gnostic faiths to be able to re-merge with God. And so what we have with AI is they have the belief that they can build this out through digital means and get everybody to share the same mind. And as it's put, say, in Paulo Freire's book from 1984 is called The Politics of Education. And the foreword to that book by an educator called Henry Giroux, he brags. He says that Paulo Freire has the truly utopian prophetic vision for education and the future of humanity. And he says that it's prophetic. He explicitly says this, in that it calls us to build the kingdom of God here on earth. That's the direct quote. That's what they think they're doing. So if we have our secret knowledge about how the world's supposed to be as a socialist utopia, and we build it out that way by handing all the power over to the state, and the state manifests this in physical reality, then we've rebuilt the kingdom of God.
This is the whole ballgame. So not only is AI potentially apocalyptic because it could go out of its way, but it's actually more apocalyptic if it does what it's actually programmed to do.
It's meant to immanentize the eschaton, as it's been said, to bring about the end of the world, the end of history specifically,
yes,
so that we all become one humanity with one mind working together for a more sustainable and inclusive future.
And slight problem, these people are awful and they're evil and their ideas really bad. And so what we must understand is that how do I put this in a way to summarize that? Artificial intelligence is a means to the end that we always feared. It's an accelerant, right?
That's the best way to put it.
It is an exponent because people wonder, oh, Charlie, are we going to go to socialism or globalism? They look at artificial intelligence as a way to make the process, to do the work, to go through the dialectic in a shorter period of time. Is that fair?
That's right. And with absolute authority. Who could possibly question a super intelligent computer?
It's inherently totalitarian.
God.
Yes, that's right.
That's right. That's exactly right.
We need to talk about... go ahead. Please continue.
It's demonic. It's obviously it's, demonic.
It's totally... Of course it is. And I mean, tell me why. I mean, you're not a Christian yet. I'm still working on that. But tell me, why would it be demonic? 1 minute remaining.
Well, the object of the whole kind of satanic and demonic project is to elevate yourself to the position of the creator. Yes. And that's exactly what their project is. And of course, to do so through this perverse means where it's going to be everything's always in conflict. Everybody's got the wrong attitude. And we're going to force people to believe that, you know, particular way. This is demon possession kind of stuff.
Jeez, man. And what's remarkable is how unprepared I think most people are ideologically and philosophically for this. And so we're going to talk about it. It ties with your book that I want everyone to buy. Put it up on the screen. The Marxification of Education. It's so good. Paulo Freire's Critical Marxism. I thought it was Pablo. I'm getting my eyes fixed. Don't worry. That's imminent. And The Theft of Education. And what a powerful cover. Wow. With the sickle and the hammer right there at the middle. We're going to talk about that. Very powerful and really accurate way to summarize that. So James, just riff on your book, The Marxification of Education.
Well, I mean, American education has been stolen. What I say in the book is your children go to Paulo Freire schools, and you probably haven't heard of Paulo Freire, but he is the missing link between all of the critical theorists and woke. How did we get here? The answer is actually Paulo Freire. He created an educational program where political education is the true education. You use the academic lesson as an excuse to have political conversations with kids. And the point of those political conversations is to teach them to denounce everything in the world that they see around them in the hope that a better world might emerge.
James has a very impressive roster of books, including Race Marxism. You know, James, somebody asked me the other day because I was so upset that one woman couldn't answer it. But you have the best answer. I stole it from you. Just right from you. They say, what is woke? I say, call everything racist till you control it. Boom.
Yeah, that's basically it. That's right.
It's basically the whole deal. It's so explain to us how the trans movement, the trans social contagion plays into the Marxification of our country. People are not always able to connect those dots. Please do so.
Sure. I mean, I'll start a little bit further back with what's called queer theory. You and I talked about queer theory. I think one of the first public conversations that happened was you and me on stage about queer theory. And I think I said that it opens the gates to hell or something like
that. I couldn't stop
laughing. Which is true. It's true. But so in queer theory, what you are actually dealing with is literally a Marxist theory. It is the idea that instead of private property like, you know, factories or hammers and sickles or whatever it happens to be, people own a kind of private property called being normal. And outside of normal is being queer. And so people who gets to define what's normal? Well, normal people, people who consider themselves normal. So they think that being normal and being, if you're a child, childhood innocence, et cetera, that this is a socially constructed phenomenon. It has nothing to do with reality. It has nothing to do with the way that human beings are actually constructed or created. It's actually just arbitrary, and that certain people set themselves up to be the bourgeoisie of the normal population so that they could exclude the weirdos and the perverts and the freaks and the demons or whatever else. The groomers in particular, yes, very much so. We're seeing that what the United Nations just put out this thing saying we should decriminalize pedophilia if the child consents. But children can't consent. So they think that's just up for grabs and socially constructed too. And so you have a Marxist theory of what it means to be considered within the normal boundaries of society. And what they're doing is creating these trans and queer activists to go out and destroy, or as Marx would say, abolish normalcy. So everything that's normal, everything that's good has to be called into question. It has to be deconstructed. It has to be, in their word, queered as a verb. It has to be resisted on principle. The definition, in fact, of queer, and it comes from a book from 1995 by David Halperin. It's called Saint Foucault is the name of the book. He says that queer
Michel
is defined.
Foucault.
Yeah, that's right. He's holding him up as a saint. That's what he's actually doing. He's trying to create.
And by the way, you want to talk about a pervert, but that's a separate issue. But yes.
So. He's a total pervert, a total pervert. And he says that queer is an identity without an essence because it is a purely oppositional identity. It's an identity designed to oppose anything considered normative, anything considered normal, any social expectations, and to throw them basically under the bus to try to destroy them. So what you have then, in a very kind of Maoist way, to switch from Marx to Mao, Mao, a lot of people don't know, used identity politics in the Cultural Revolution to destroy China. He knew that if he separated the population into good identities and bad identities, and he created five of each, that he could pressure the people that had bad identities. Maybe your grandfather owned land. He was a farmer and owned land. Well, that's a bad identity. So you as a kid get bad identity as a result. Well, in America today, we have critical race theory saying that if you were born white or if you're straight or whatever else, you have these bad identities. But if you become queer or transition as kind of the ultimate physical expression of that, because that's permanent damage to you, then you get to have a good identity. We're going to celebrate you. We're going to affirm you. And what they're building out is a youth that operates like Mao's Red Guard. We could, I guess, call it a Rainbow Guard. We could call it a Red Guard. We could call it
Alphabet Mafia. I love Rainbow Guard. I'm stealing that. Keep going.
Yeah. So, and look at what they do. We have, for example, a trans person in Tennessee a couple of weeks ago murdering six Christians at a Christian school, three of whom are nine-year-old children.
Yes.
In a deliberate attack on Christianity because it's a competing religion. Christianity says that you can only possibly, you know, the way, the truth, and life is only possible in Jesus. renewal, rebirth, being born again is only possible through the Holy Spirit, through acceptance of Christ. And no, they're becoming their own Christ. They're saving themselves in their Gnostic Hermetic religion. Yes. And so Christianity is a major problem from them. So this attack happens, and what happens? You have all these people pour out into the streets, young people particularly, college students, high school students stepping out of school. They march down to the state house, and there were six victims of the shooting and one murderer who died in the end. And how many fingers do they hold up? Seven. There are seven victims. So they bring this first time in American history, wow, we have a mass murderer who gets turned into the victim.
Wow.
Who gets turned into, and within a couple of days, they flip the whole thing over. And now it's about these other people, and it's about trans rights or human rights. And everybody's marching and saying that, you know, we have to have, even though there's so much trans violence, we now have to hold up. That's because the society won't let them have what they want. And it's the society's fault. And they're the real victims. And you can see how it plays out. It's the Red Guard all over again.
James, come back next week. Our audience is loving this. It's off the charts. People are emailing us. And so Marxification of Education, go buy James's book. We're going to have James back whenever we can get our schedules to align. He's tough and he's brilliant. And he really, really cares about truth. James, thank you so much.
Yep, good to see you, Charlie.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.